Mallory Quinn is 21, 18 months sober, and desperate for a fresh start. When her sponsor, Russell, arranges a nanny position with the wealthy Maxwell family in pristine Springbrook, New Jersey, it seems like the perfect opportunity to rebuild her life after heroin addiction. The contrast between Mallory's world and Springbrook couldn't be starker. Yoga studios, artisanal cafes, and picture-perfect colonial houses with American flags and "Children Live Here" signs. The Maxwell's three-story Victorian home epitizes suburban perfection, complete with a wraparound porch and meticulously maintained gardens. Despite Ted Maxwell's reservations about her addiction history and lack of college education, Caroline hires Mallory to care for their shy 5-year-old son, Teddy. The rules are extensive: no drugs, drinking, smoking, profanity, screens, red meat, junk food, unauthorized visitors, or posting photos of Teddy online. The final handwritten rule says simply, "Have fun," a command that feels oddly forced amid so many restrictions. As Mallory settles into the guest cottage, she can't help feeling that beneath the Maxwell family's perfect exterior lurks something unsettling. Why has Teddy never seen Star Wars, Toy Story, or even Sesame Street? Why does he ask such profound questions about death? And why do the neighbors refer to her cottage as Devil House? The first truly disturbing development occurs when Mallory discovers Teddy has an imaginary friend named Anya, who sleeps under his bed and sings to him. While Caroline dismisses this as normal, Teddy soon begins producing disturbing drawings he claims Anya acts out for him, including one depicting a man dragging a woman's lifeless body through a starry forest. When Mallory tries to file away a particularly gruesome drawing, Teddy smiles innocently and says, "Anya says she wants you to have it." The drawings grow increasingly elaborate and violent, showing scenes of burial and strangulation, all with skill far beyond a 5-year-old's abilities. Teddy attributes these violent scenes to Anya's stories. After accidentally falling asleep, Mallory wakes to find Teddy standing over her with a drawing of a man burying Anya in a forest. He cheerfully explains the man stole Anya's little girl and buried her, but she got out. Is Teddy creating these masterful, disturbing artworks? Are the Maxwells planting them? Or is something supernatural occurring? Desperate for answers, Mallory consults Mitzi, the eccentric neighbor, who reveals that Annie Barrett, a young woman who lived in the guest cottage in 1946, vanished mysteriously. Her cousin George found blood, but no body. Annie had disappeared without a trace, sparking witch rumors. Mallory finds an ally in Adrian, a landscaper working on the Maxwell's property. After showing him Teddy's disturbing drawings, Adrian notices they resemble hidden picture puzzles and believes they depict Annie Barrett's murder. During a séance with Mitzi, Mallory feels a presence guiding her hand to spell out, "Yes, beware thief, help flower." Meanwhile, Teddy speaks to someone unseen and draws frantically with his non-dominant hand. Adrian's mother discovers Annie's works, revealing she was George's 19-year-old European cousin who arrived in 1946. Though George claims she was irresponsible and abducted in 1948, Annie's writings portray her as a solitary artist who painted and walked barefoot in the forest. But does something darker lurk beneath Springbrook's perfect surface? Everything changes when Mitzi is found dead in the woods wearing only a nightgown. Investigating, Mallory and Adrian contact Curtis Campbell, Annie Barrett's grandson, who reveals a stunning truth. Annie wasn't murdered. She was a British woman who eloped to Ohio with her black lover, Willie, in 1948 while pregnant. Her cousin George staged her murder with pig's blood to avoid scandal. If Annie wasn't murdered, who is Anya? Mitzi's final unfinished text provides a clue. "We need to talk. I was wrong about before. Anya isn't a name, it's..." At the Maxwell's house, Mallory examines Teddy's drawings more carefully, noticing one showing an angel with Caroline's stun gun. She realizes Teddy has never actually been on an airplane despite mentions of Barcelona. Mallory confronts them. Why didn't you tell me Teddy is a girl? Though Caroline claims they're raising Teddy as transgender, Mallory discovers they've kidnapped someone's daughter and disguised her as a boy. Teddy is actually Flora Baroth. When Mallory threatens to tell Detective Briggs, Caroline smashes a wine bottle against her head as Ted returns with the stun gun. As Caroline injects Mallory with supposed heroin to stage an overdose, Mallory encounters Marget's spirit, neck broken at an unnatural angle, whose touch transmits overwhelming sorrow and lakeside visions from Teddy's drawings. Ted enters unexpectedly, revealing he switched Caroline's heroin with baby powder. While freeing Mallory, he confesses his plan to escape with her to Washington with $80,000, leaving Teddy slash Flora with his two mommies. Caroline appears and shoots Ted multiple times, then forces Mallory at gunpoint to grab a knife to stage self-defense. When the wounded Ted lunges at Caroline, Mallory flees to find Teddy slash Flora. In the enchanted forest where they hide, Teddy slash Flora moves toward Caroline's coaxing voice. Suddenly, his eyes roll back as Marget takes control. He knocks away Caroline's gun and repeatedly stabs her neck with a broken arrow. Mallory pulls the child away as Caroline thrashes. When police arrive, the child returns to normal. Seeing Marget watching from afar, Mallory confesses to the murder to protect the child. In Hidden Pictures, supernatural elements serve as metaphors for trauma and recovery. Marget's possession of Flora represents trauma's control over victims, while the disturbing drawings exemplify how trauma emerges symbolically when direct expression fails. The story's power comes from blurring supernatural horror with psychological thriller. Whether the ghosts are real or manifestations of trauma becomes less important than their effect. Past violence haunting the present until truth and justice emerge. The novel explores questions about identity and redemption. Can Mallory overcome addiction and reinvent herself? Can Flora reclaim her identity after being forced to live as someone else? The answers are nuanced. Recovery remains possible, but requires acknowledging rather than erasing the past. Mallory confirms her suspicions. Teddy is female, matching Flora's description. Property records connect the Maxwells to Flora's disappearance site. Their passports reveal they'd never been to Spain. Declining Adrian's housing offer, Mallory moves into her sponsor Russell's guest room. She finds work at a running store, joins their running club, attends a younger church congregation, and resumes NA meetings. When visiting Flora with gifts, watercolor pencils, star fruits, and a dessert recipe booklet, the child remains polite but distant. Mallory understands Flora is trying to forget her past and adapt to her new life, where Mallory doesn't belong. As they leave for Niagara Falls, Flora runs after them for a final silent hug, pressing a folded drawing into Mallory's hands. Sometimes healing means letting go of those who saved us. The novel concludes with hope. Even amid terrible suffering, second chances exist for those brave enough to face truth and begin again. Sometimes our ghosts aren't threats, but guides, uncovering buried truths and leading us back to ourselves.